us have read within the last kalpa, within living memory, Srimad Bhagavan, Canto 1, Chapter 5. No, we didn't retain. Well, that we understand, but if you just read it, a few, I guess, maybe less than half. Because the other thing is, you haven't read it, you really have to read it. If you don't read it and just take that class, that's really a waste of your time. You're much better off spending your time reading Srimad Bhagavatam than listening to me talk about it. However, if you've read it, then you might get something out of my talking about it. Because this is not another Bhagavatam class. I can't do in 1 week a whole chapter of Bhagavatam like we do in a Bhagavatam class. And to sit in the normal ISKCON Bhagavatam is the equivalent of reading Srimad Bhagavatam. But this will not be the equivalent of reading Srimad Bhagavatam. It's not a substitution for it. It's rather to take what you've read and to try to pull it together and bring out some of the highlights and try to understand some things that you ordinarily might not understand about Srimad Bhagavatam. So, how many of you have the first volume of Bhagavatam with you? So almost everybody. Well, so how many don't and are going to take this class? What we shall have to do is get Xeroxed up at your expense. especially if you like to mark things up. I think I have here, see, this is a Srimad Bhagavatam. And what I'll try to do is see about getting one of these for you. How many people, again, will need this? Who knows how to count? One. Hold your hands up a minute. I have to switch from words to numbers. It's hard. One, two, three, four, five, six. Is that right? Six people? Seven. Any more? Seven. Okay, I will see about that. About getting, because that means you won't have them in probably until maybe this evening. There is a copy place in the next town over, and Mifflin Town. And I think we can get that, get some copies of this run off, and you'll just have to pay for the cost, which will probably be 3 or 4 cents a page. I don't know how many pages there are, and I hope you can do that. So meanwhile, what everybody gets for free is a chapter outline. Want to pass them around, Bhakti Tony? There's a chapter outline of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 5. And what we'll do today is go a little bit of Chapter 4, which leads up to Chapter 5, and then we'll go into the fifth chapter. I picked this chapter because this chapter is where Srimad Bhagavatam talks about itself and its special position in the Vedic literature and how it came to be written. What were the instructions of, it's called Instructions of Narad Muni to Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva is the writer and Narad Muni is his spiritual master. So he wrote this under the instructions and inspirations of his spiritual master. So what did Narada Muni hope to accomplish by doing this? And it also tells us about the unique place that Srimad Bhagavatam has in Vedic literature. And it also contains, in a very nice way, what we might call a critique of a large part of the Vedic literature and of the work that Vyasadeva did. Then it contains also Narada Muni's story, How I Came to Krishna Consciousness. This habit of preaching to somebody about the value of Krishna consciousness and then illustrating it by one's own story or experience is a very old one and is highly authorized, because this we see that Narad Muni tells the story about how he became a devotee. And out of this story, he draws out several pertinent facts about Krishna consciousness and the power of Krishna consciousness. So all those things we'll go over. Anybody? Some people came in late. There's you have them? Why don't you give them? There's some. This is the course outline of the chapter, not an outline of the course. Now, a little bit about mechanics. I will have to grade you by a final examination. The final examination will be 1.5 hour long. It will be on the last day. The second half hour, we will together grade the final examination. It will consist of things like true, false, multiple choice, fill in the blank, and matching words. Because those are easy to grade. And that way we can all take the exam. So I will try to highlight things as we go on, things that you should know, words that you should remember. There will also be one verse to memorize. You'll have a choice of a verse to memorize from this chapter. I don't know if I'll make it extra credit or not, but so that's what we'll do. So we will have 7 periods for teaching. And then the final period will be the final examination. And I just might try to include some tricky little thing in the examination to decide whether you read the chapter. In other words, something that's in the chapter that we did not cover in class. But I don't know. I could do that, however. Anyway, I reserve that option. Okay. Are there any more outlines left? Did they all get passed out? Okay, because I need at least... Yeah, give me the... I need at least one for my own notes here. So this is just a basic breaking down of the narration in this chapter into its various components. And that's just to help you find your way around. I don't think I need to go over it right now. What I want to go over this morning is I want to start with chapter 4, which is about the period, the appearance of Sri Narada. Now, this is a dialogue that takes place at Naimisharanya Forest between Suta Goswami, who is the speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam, and a whole group of sages who had gathered there. And they have one spokesman whom they elected. What's his name? Who knows his name? The spokesman for the sages at Naimisharanya Forest? Huh? Shaunaka. Shaunaka Rishi. Yeah. Shaunaka Rishi. Suta himself has a famous father. Who knows who his father is? Romaharshana Sutra. Sutta. Sutta. Sutta is the designation of a mixed caste. It means a Brahmana mother and a Kshatriya father. And the Suttas traditionally were, they're always described by, I don't see where Prabhupada describes them, they're bards. Guys who sit and tell epic stories about the exploits of kings and things like this. This was their traditional occupational duty of the Suttas. But they were a mixed caste called a Pratiloma caste. But somehow or other, because of his qualifications, Romaharshana Sutta became an immediate student of Vyasadeva. And his son is called Suta Goswami. So in this chapter, Shonaka Rishi says to Sutta Goswami, he says, begs him, please tell us, relate to us Srimad Bhagavatam, which was spoken by the great and powerful sage Shukadev Goswami. So an event had already happened, right? There was already the narration, one, the first public narration of Srimad Bhagavatam had already taken place when Maharaj Parikshit heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Sukadev Goswami. So you got to remember all these names, right? Sukadev, Shonaka, Sutta, they all begin with S's, right? Like one of these Russian novels where all the characters and names rhyme. And so the first speaker is Sukadev Goswami, and the hearer is Maharaj Parikshit. Oh, this has a dot under it, really. Maharaj Parikshit, who is the emperor of the world. And, of course, Shukadev is the son of Vyasadev. And this is all, as we'll see today, this is all part of a big scheme by Krishna to prepare the Vedic literature for transmission in Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga had begun, and we find out actually in this chapter, it is mentioned that in Kali Yuga, that Vyasadeva sees that Kali Yuga is coming, and that the effect of Kali Yuga is that everything material deteriorates. Bhautikanam chabhavanam shaktihrasam. It just deteriorates in its power. So that as a result, the mode of goodness would decline. People would become agitated, stupid. The duration of life would shorten. They would become unlucky and totally incapable of understanding spiritual life. This is what's going to happen. Now, what this means, actually, you understand that if you take a human being now and you deprive them of a proper diet when they're young, they become brain damaged. So what this is saying is that in Kali Yuga, everyone's brain damaged. The vegetables and the fruits do not have the same potency that they used to have. So everyone is dim-witted in Kali Yuga. And so the question is, how are these dim-witted people be able to understand stunted, dim-witted fools, be able to understand the Vedic literature? Right. So this is part of a plan for which Vyasadeva appeared. The word Vyas means literally divider, because he prepared the Vedas for transmission in Kali Yuga. This is all explained in this chapter. The Vedic literature was one. There was one Veda called the Ayurveda. And Vyasadeva divided it into four. The four Vedas are the Rig, it's R-I-G or R-A-K, Sama, how do you spell Yajur? Forgot. Rig Sama. These are the four Vedas. Huh? And each of those Vedas contain four parts. Now, the four Vedas taken together have this name Shruti. Every devotee must know this word, Shruti. Prabhupada uses it all the time. He says the Shruti mantras. It's like this, Shruti. Now, the Vedas were not originally written. They did not get written down, according to this story, until the beginning of Kali Yuga. Because suddenly people needed this crutch. They couldn't remember anymore, and things had to be written down. So you can understand that we're receiving a history of the past that's quite different from what modern historians believe. About the same time Kali Yuga began, about 5,000 years ago, is the same time modern historians posit the beginning of civilization. People coming together in cities, and the appearance of writing, literacy. These are supposedly great step forward for humanity. Well, this agrees, yes, literacy appeared 5,000 years ago, but it was not a sign of advancement, it was a sign of decline. Because before that time, there was no need to write anything down because everyone's memory was perfect. If my wife has a grocery list, she has a shopping list for me to do, and I sit there and she rattles off 15 things, I say, got it, and I just go out and buy it. I'm more advanced than if I have to sit there and open my little portable memo minder and key it in, you know? My sharp wizard, you know, with 900... You say the guy with the sharp wizard with 914K and all this other stuff is definitely more advanced. He has that little palm, you know, handheld computer. But actually the guy who just remembers and goes off. I spent the weekend, part of the weekend in London with this Indian businessman, Sri Chand Hinduja, who's reputedly the seventh wealthiest man in London. And I think he just acquired a large portion of Shell Oil Corporation. And he happened to mention that he never has in his life touched a calculator. He said because he knows as soon as he does, he'll lose his ability to think and to in his head. So he doesn't use them. Doesn't touch them. So all you who are taking notes here. So the idea is that people's memories were so well attuned and so alert that when the teacher, the spiritual master, would speak, people would hear it. And they would remember it without any changes or deficiencies or defects. But now that Kali Yuga was beginning, the Vedas were in danger. So Vyasadeva had to do something. So of course we're really coming in with a very radically different version of human history. Our version of human history is there was a more advanced civilization on this planet when everybody else thinks there were Cro-Magnons and Neanderthals and so on. They'll change their minds eventually, but right now this view is not accepted. So because things were declining and Kali Yuga was beginning, Vyasadeva wrote down the Vedas and divided them into these four: the Rig Veda, Sama Veda, Yajurveda and Atharva Veda. Sometimes this is R-I-K, sometimes this is J-U-S. It's just different grammatical endings for the same word. But these are the four Vedas. And collectively, the four Vedas are called Shruti. And in the Shrutis, there's different groups. One is, the first group is called the Samhitas, like Brahma Samhita. The first part of the Shruti Samhita, these are the Vedic, they're called, translated usually as hymns. Usually verses that were chanted during sacrificial performances. So Samhita. Sometimes we chant Samhitas from the Vedas. Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam Sada Pasyanti Sura. That's a Veda. That's a Veda Samhita. We still chant them. Number of occasions from the earliest, I say earliest, this is a habit you get into according to modern scholars. The vision I'm giving you now is chronological. Actually, it was already there by the time this was written down. It was already complete. So sometimes the Samhitas are referred to as earlier or as later. They see an historical development of the Vedas. We don't. Samhita, then after that there's a section that's usually called the Brahmanas. Something like that. I may have that spelled wrong. These are usually directions for performing sacrifices and things like that. I'll check on this. Next part is... the Aranyakas means those are for vanaprasas, for just means treatises for forest dwellers. Where you couldn't perform the Vedic sacrifices at home anymore, you went to the forest. So this is how to do all these things by meditation. And then after that, the famous Upanishads. One of the most famous Upanishads is actually called the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. And sometimes people don't know where to classify something as a Upanishad is the final concluding philosophical portion of the Vedas. So what you tend to do is you tend to go from fruit of work to philosophical knowledge as you go up this list. Because these are the Karmakanda fire sacrifices that you hear about, where animals are sacrificed, the Brahmins chant their mantras, kings get sons, wealth, all good things come elevated to the higher planets. All the stuff that Prabhupada talks about, this is all in this part of the Vedas where there are Brahmanas to do it. But then, this is for people who are beginning to, who are more renounced. And in the Upanishads, we have the attempt actually to understand Brahman and the self, to renounce the material world, to transcend all this thing, not to go to the heavenly planets because it's flickering and temporary happiness and so on like that. All that's in the Upanishads. So all taken together, this is Shruti. So that's what Vyasa did. To prepare people for the coming of Kali Yuga, he wrote down the Vedas, divided them into four, and that original four Vedas, up to and including the Upanishads, all that is Shruti.
So in each of the
Yeah, I'm not quite sure if that's all the way across. So some of these may have more Upanishads associated with them than others. But generally this is the way it's explained. I haven't checked it out to see how many Upanishads are with which Veda and so on. But generally it's explained that way. Yeah.
Verses, but not
Yeah. The Rig Veda has all the hymns. The Sama Veda are the hymns set to music. I'm not quite sure. The Ayurveda deals with sacrifice. And the Atharva Veda is nothing new. And in fact, the Atharva Veda is mostly described. I haven't read the Atharva Veda, and I haven't heard about it from Prabhupada, but it's described by people who study these things professionally as spells. The kind of curses, spells, mantras for doing your daily tasks and getting them done. So it's got the lower status. So that's why these are the real important Vedas. Although you hear, like sometimes you'll meet Brahmins from India, they have a name like Chaturvedi. That means they came from a tradition where they learned all the four Vedas, or Trivedi, where they learned the three Vedas, or even Dvivedi. I've seen that one too. So there are four, but because this one is not of such high status as the other two, that's why I'm doubtful. I don't even know if there are any Upanishads associated with the Atharva Veda. I can't say that for sure. But these three are the main ones, these three. That's why they're called three. Any other questions about this? Yeah, right. It does, because the rest is karmakanda, or the Aranyakas, which we don't have any of. I mean, Prabhupada didn't bother to translate much of anything except the Isha Upanishad from the original Vedas. But there are reasons for that. Then Vyasadeva, this is all described in here. What happened? This is all leading up to how he describes Srimad Bhagavatam and what place Srimad Bhagavatam has in the scheme of things. Because then he composed supplementary literature. This goes by the name of Smitri. I guess this is the dog. Smitri. Smitri. This is the second important word here. Smitri. Vedic supplements composed by Vyasadeva. Now notice we use the word Vedas. I have been spending now a big chunk of my time for the last 6 months meeting with scholars and trying to persuade them, with some success, that the word Veda has a broad sense of the term. Because Indologists or scholars, Western scholars or Western trained scholars who study these things, they get very upset with ISKCON when we say things like, you know, Vedic culture, Vedic knowledge. They shiver. Because to them, the Upanishads are post-Vedic. Vedic, they think there's an historical development of religion in this sequence. And they think, Vedic means, really, they use it to refer to the language of the first nine books of the Rig Veda. There's a kind of Sanskrit that's different from classical Sanskrit. They call that Vedic, or Vedic Sanskrit. Has different kind of rules of grammar and things like that. And with that, they associate the culture of sacrificial performances and so on, what we would call the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas. After that, it's post-Vedic to them. And then they run across ISKCON devotees. If you walk into one of their classrooms and start talking about Vedic culture, Vedic recipes even, which has, of course, tomatoes in it, which didn't exist in India until the British came. And we mean something that doesn't have pizza or pasta, you know, with Vedic recipes. But they get a little... So, but actually, the tradition itself, in dealing with scholars, you have to tell them that a tradition has a right to define itself. You may come in from the outside and say, this is this, but what does the tradition say? And there's a traditional two divisions of the Vedas called Shruti and Smriti. And as we'll see, there's a verse here in this chapter of Bhagavatam, text 20. Describes Vyasadeva after seeing, he has a vision, he sees Kali Yuga coming, he sees what's going to happen. He says, he saw that the sacrifices mentioned in the Vedas were means by which people's occupations could be purified. And so to simplify the process, he divided the one Veda into four. I'm reading from 1.4.19. He divided the one Veda into four in order to expand them among men. The four divisions of the original sources of knowledge, the Vedas, were made separately. But the historical facts and authentic stories mentioned in the Puranas are called the fifth Veda. So here, there's something that's called the fifth Veda. This is the four Vedas, and then there's something called the fifth Veda, which is part of the Smriti. So the Smriti has different divisions. One is Purana. And another is Itihasa. Those are the two major divisions of Smriti. There's other odds and ends in there. But the two main divisions are Purana. The word Purana means old. That's all it means. And it means here, just like the Srimad Bhagavatam is called also Bhagavata Purana. This is a Purana. There are traditionally 18 Puranas composed by Vyasadeva. Six in the mode of goodness, or intended for those in the mode of goodness, six intended for those in the mode of passion, and six intended for those in the mode of ignorance. That's full of, you know, black magic and witchcraft and stuff like that, worshipping ghosts and demons. Now, the 18 traditionally Puranas. So this is what Vyasadeva, he divided the Vedas into four. And then he taught them to different disciples. He started chains of disciplic succession. You're going to be in charge of the Rig Veda, pass it down. You're going to be in charge of the Yajurveda, pass it down. And so on. He took his disciples and gave them each a succession to start for teaching the Vedas so they would be transmitted. Thorough job, huh? Now, this is all of Vyasadeva's labor, which is being described here. After seeing that Kali Yuga is coming, understanding what's going to happen for people, he sat down and he did this prodigious labor of editing. Vyasa, he said, means editor or dividing. So first he edited, divided this, gave it to different of his disciples. Their names are given here. The different rishis who gave the Vedas. And he mentions here Sutta Goswami was put in charge of the Puranas and Itihasas. Did I mention this one? Itihasa means history. And specifically, it refers to the Mahabharata. Now, there is another history not composed by Vyasadeva. The Ramayana, yeah. By Valmiki. That's also considered Itihasa. So the two Itihasas are generally... again, Western scholars will not call them histories. They think they're legendary stories, mythological and legends. So they call them epics. But itihasa means history. It happened like this. So he composed especially this, the Puranas, which also contain historical material. But the Mahabharata is a chronological narration. It's more like a chronological history. Whereas the Puranas, they're not in chronological order. The stories are not in chronological order. And they contain other stuff that's not specifically historical also. Cosmological, how the universe is created, the pre-creation, the post-creation, and various. There's 10 subjects that how to go back to Godhead, stories of how the Lord protects His devotees. All these things are in the Puranas. So the idea of this supplementary literature is to make these original four Vedas more accessible. Because the original four Vedas, including the Upanishads, are very difficult. So it describes here, thus the great sage Vyasadeva, who is very kind to the ignorant masses, edited the Vedas so they might be assimilated by less intellectual men. Out of compassion, the great sage thought it wise that this would enable men to achieve the ultimate goal of life. Thus he compiled the great historical narration called the Mahabharata for women, laborers, and friends of the twice-born, which is everybody in Kali Yuga, basically. Fallen members of the twice-born class, laborers, and women. These are people who traditionally in Vedic culture were considered to be beyond ability to be saved. But he made this. If you go to the Mahabharata, you will find the Mahabharata is very, very simple Sanskrit. Anybody takes a university course in Sanskrit, at the end of the year, you'll be reading verses from the Mahabharata, which includes in the middle of it Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita is a section, a chapter, like a chapter of the Mahabharata. And it's in very, very simple language. And he says here, the less intelligent class of men, namely women, shudras, and unqualified sons of the higher castes, are devoid of necessary qualifications to understand the purpose of the transcendental Vedas. For them, the Mahabharata was prepared. The purpose of the Mahabharata is to administer to the purpose of the Vedas, and therefore within the Mahabharata, the summary Veda of Bhagavad Gita is placed. So he calls it here, Prabhupada calls it here, this is in the Canto 1, Chapter 4, Text 25, purport. He calls it the summary Veda. The less intelligent are more interested in stories than philosophy. So there we are. You have your choice, reading a cheap paperback or Sartre being in nothingness or something. Which do you pick up? So it says here, more interested in stories than in philosophy, and therefore the philosophy of the Vedas in the form of Bhagavad Gita is spoken by Lord Sri Krishna. Now, the Mahabharata, not to blaspheme Vedic literature, but is in fact the world's greatest soap opera. It transcends its genre, but it is in fact basically that kind of a story, of a big, gigantic family of incredibly noble, powerful people who get involved in a huge family fight with each other, full of plots and intrigues and tragedy and reversals and heartbreak like there's nobody's business. for sheer heartbreak and noble suffering. You can't meet the mom. I mean, it really grabs you and picks you up and takes you along. It certainly does. So, but in the middle of it, Vyasadeva puts Bhagavad Gita. So those of us who are dragged along by the narration and the story and, you know, turning pages to hear, what happens next? See, that's the sign that you're reading cheap literature. If you're if your reason for turning the page is, what happens next? Rather than enlightenment, a higher plane. So you're going along in this vein. What happens next? And with all the cliffhangers and everything. There's Bhagavad Gita. So Shankaracharya, in some verses glorifying Bhagavad Gita, describes the Mahabharata as the setting and the Bhagavad Gita as the jewel in the setting. And he also describes it here. He said, "What the Prabhupada here calls it the summary Veda," and he goes on to say, "Vyasadeva and Lord Krishna are both on the transcendental plane. They're both incarnations, the Supreme Lord, and therefore they collaborated in doing good to the fallen souls of this age." Vyasadeva took advantage of the historical occasions that were taking place, and Krishna was an actor in the history of his time. So when he chronicled it, you know, he put Krishna in the middle of it, and then Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita, knowing well that Vyasadeva would record it and put it in the Bhagavad Gita. So he says, "They collaborated in doing good to the fallen souls of this age. The Bhagavad Gita is the essence of all Vedic knowledge. It is the first book of spiritual values, as the Upanishads are. The Vedanta philosophy is the subject matter for study by spiritual graduates." That's another word we have to look at, huh? Spiritual graduates. "Only the postgraduate spiritual students can enter into the spiritual or devotional service of the Lord." So that's the idea. So here it is. Now there's a beautiful, beautiful image given by Shankaracharya in his praise of the Bhagavad Gita. He says like this. Remember we discussed the Upanishads, right? He says, "The Upanishads are like a herd of cows." He compared them to a herd of cows. And Krishna, the cowherd, is the herder of those cows of the Upanishads. Arjuna is the calf. And the milk taken from the cows of the Upanishads and given to Arjuna by the cowherd Krishna is the Bhagavad Gita. So that's the status of the Bhagavad Gita. That's why Prabhupada refers to it as the Gita Upanishad. Gita Upanishad. It has the same status as the Upanishads. And you'll find, if you study the Bhagavad Gita carefully, you'll find that Krishna goes through it and completely discusses all the different aspects of the Vedas. And so, now, what does this mean? The Vedas are big. They have so many things in there. They recommend different things to different people. Different practices are there. They're described as a desire tree. Desire tree is a tree from which you can get bananas, apples, oranges, kumquats, watermelons. You know, everything comes from the banana tree, from the desire tree. You can get anything. So is there one single final end to the Vedas? Well, it's hard to know. Some say this, some say that. It's hard enough to figure out now Kali Yuga has begun, what are we going to do? especially those who belong to the, you know, the Sri Shudra and Dvija Bandhu category, which is all of us. How are we going to find out? So Krishna very nicely comes and he surveys all the Vedic literature and states flat out, Vedaish Chasarva Aham Eva Vejaha. The purpose of all the Vedas is to understand me, is to know me. And having has looked at all the Vedic dharmas, the paths of religion that are included in the Vedas, he says, Sarva Dharman Puritjaja, Mame Kam Saranam Bhaja. In conclusion, all these different, he's shown these different paths in the Vedas, they all lead to me, so you can make a quick work of them, give them up, and just come to me exclusively. That's what Krishna does. Very, very clear. Well, when you say clear, clear to whom? Actually, not to too many people. Clear to those who have actually heard the Bhagavad Gita in disciplic succession, maybe. People who actually have followed its instructions. Those people who have read the Vedas and not followed the Bhagavad Gita's instructions have an interest in covering it up. And so that's why you'll find out that it has not dawned on many people what the Bhagavad Gita is actually saying. And they manage to somehow present the Bhagavad Gita and translate the Bhagavad Gita and leave surrendering to Krishna out as the message of the Bhagavad Gita. In fact, you go in India, for example, it's the great scandalous cover-up. Go to any Indian. What is the meaning of the Bhagavad Gita? They know instantly. Do your duty. The meaning of the Bhagavad Gita is do your duty. Well, what is your duty? That's right. It is do your duty. What is your duty? The whole Bhagavad Gita is about duty. What is your duty? Your duty, it turns out, is, in fact, to surrender to Krishna. But they never go any further than that. Just do your duty. Boy, what do you want to tell a sixth grader, huh? Do your duty. So, got a little covered up. After doing all of this, Vyasadeva finds himself unsatisfied. He writes down all the Puranas. He composes the Mahabharata. He puts in the middle of it the Bhagavad Gita. He edits the Vedas. He sets up the disciplic successions for all this is transmitted. You think he would be happy? He's not happy. He's upset. He's disconsolate. Dissatisfied at heart. He says, I have under strict disciplinary vow unpretentiously worshipped the Vedas, the spiritual master, and the altar of sacrifice. I have also abided by the rulings and have shown the import of disciplic succession through the explanation of the Mahabharata, by which even women, Shudras, and others, friends of the twice-born, can see the path of religion. I am feeling incomplete, though I myself am fully equipped with everything required by the Vedas. So then he wonders, maybe I did something wrong. And he says, this may be because I did not specifically point out the devotional service of the Lord, which is dear to both perfect beings and to the infallible Lord. I did not point out Bhagavata Dharma. I left it out. He's thinking, maybe that's what it is. So at that point, Narada Muni arrives at his ashram. Narada Muni is his spiritual master. Vyasadeva is on the bank of the Saraswati. Narada Muni comes. And that's when our chapter that we're studying in this course begins. Narada Muni shows up. And there's the meeting. I said that this, number one, if you look at the outline, the first verse is the setting. Notice they're both described as rishis, sages, Devarshi and Viprarshi. Devarshi is always Narada Muni. It means the rishi, the sage among the devas. And Viprarshi, who knows what that means? Vipra rishi? Sage among the brahmanas, yeah. So Narada Muni is the Viprarshi, the Devarshi, excuse me, and Vyasadeva is the Viprarshi. So there's the two rishis are now together for a high-level conversation about what's he supposed to do now. So Vyasadeva did all this, and as we will see, he finds out that he has neglected something, and the remedy is to write Srimad Bhagavatam. So this ends up being actually his magnum opus, his crowning achievement that he had left out in the beginning. And now, at the insistence of Narada Muni, he puts it in. And so that Vyasadeva adds this last piece of literature, the Srimad Bhagavatam, or the Bhagavatam Purana. Then he speaks it, then at that point he teaches it to Shukadeva Goswami, his son, who is the most famous sage. And then the first public hearing is Shukadeva Goswami speaks to Maharaj Parikshit. This is the state occasion. Maharaj Parikshit is the emperor of the world. He's going to die in 7 days. He's sitting listening to Srimad Bhagavatam. It's a big deal. So when later on the sages gathered at Naimisharanya Forest to perform a 1,000-year-old sacrifice, a 1,000-year-long sacrifice, because they know Kali Yuga is coming, they want to do something to alleviate the problems of Kali Yuga, so they decide they're going to perform this 1,000-year-long sacrifice at Naimisharanya Forest. Because Naimisharanya is a special place. Whatever you do there, it'll benefit people in general. So they're deciding what sacrifice to perform. And when Suta Goswami comes, Suta Goswami shows up, and they know that he was there when Shukadeva Goswami spoke Bhagavatam to Maharaj Parikshit. Some time ago this happened. It was a great, famous occasion. So Suta was one of the original hearers of Bhagavatam from Shukadeva Goswami when he spoke it to Maharaj Parikshit. So then Shonaka, speaking on behalf of the sages at Naimisharanya Forest, begs him, please recite the Srimad Bhagavatam as you have heard it from Shukadeva Goswami. And they ask him a question in the third verse of chapter 4. Shonaka says to him, in what period and in what place was this first begun? That is to say, Srimad Bhagavatam. And why was this taken up? Why was Srimad Bhagavatam composed? From where did Krishna Dvaipayana Vyasa, this is his whole name, Krishna Dvaipayana. Dvaipayana means born on an island. Apparently he's born on an island. Dvipa Dvaipayana. Krishna Dvaipayana Vyasa. From where did Krishna Dvaipayana Vyasa, the great sage, get the inspiration to compile this literature? This question is the answer to this question, what we're going to be, where he got the inspiration, why he did it, and so on. So Shonaka had asked that of Suta Goswami, and so Suta Goswami is going to tell the story. So any questions? Yes. It was hard. It was difficult. Normally, as long as you were, there was always some way, but there was not sufficient means. Somehow or other, one could take up devotional service. Anyone could be saved. But when it became a matter of there was going to be nobody else around but low class people, something had to be done. But the traditional way was that if you were born without the necessary qualifications, then it was just expecting that by doing your duty within your own realm. Oh, if we finally got one, huh? Maybe we should start signing this. I don't have any names. Is there one already? Okay. Is that one filled up, or is there anyone? So then it became possible. But before then, there wasn't. Before this Mahabharata was written down, there was not so much facility for people who weren't qualified. Of course, people in general were more qualified in those days. But you did your duties, and you take your next birth on a higher ring, and then gradually work your way up, get to be born a Brahmin, and you know, yeah. Yeah, but if you no, but the thing was that if you acted in the mode of ignorance, but you followed the rules and regulations of the Vedic scriptures as they applied to you, and you served the brahmanas and all these other things properly, then you would be elevated. So there was a way to get elevated out of that mode of ignorance. Yeah.
The Bhagavad Gita is the essence of all Vedic knowledge. Prabhupada says you can reach perfection just by understanding Bhagavad Gita. Why was Vyasadeva still unsatisfied after Mahabharata with Bhagavad Gita?
Well, one thing you can see is look how many people didn't understand it. You can see already there's a difficulty. And the Bhagavad Gita turns out that it doesn't really give everything. You can reach perfection. But if you understand Bhagavad Gita, now I have to surrender to Krishna. The consequence of understanding Bhagavad Gita is that you surrender to Krishna. You give up all cheating religions and you surrender to Krishna. So then the next thing you got to do is go to Srimad Bhagavatam. So if Srimad Bhagavatam is not there to go to, then you have a problem. So he had actually left something out. So you have to look at it in the whole. I mean, when he says Bhagavad Gita is enough, it means it's enough to get you to go to Srimad Bhagavatam. That's what it means. But if the Bhagavatam is not there, then you're going to have some difficulty, because what you can hear and chant about Krishna is not as much available when the whole culture of Srimad Bhagavatam is given. Okay? No.
Why did the Vyasadeva waste his time writing down the cover conversation?
Yeah, we'll take that up. Yeah, Narada Muni is on his case about it. He just wanted to take the Vedas and duplicate them and pass them on just as they were. So that's what he did. Narada Muni tells him that's a big mistake. Anyway, it's done. But it's interesting commentary. I mean, here's a commentary from Srimad Bhagavatam saying certain part of the Vedas would be better. They were never transmitted. Some say Jiva Tattva empowered, and some say Vishnu. Prabhupada tends to talk about him usually as a Shaktivesh empowered Jiva. But Rupa Goswami mentions in one of the Sandarbhas that the other authorities say otherwise. So in this matter, I would imagine it doesn't make really any difference. How's your attitude going to change, right? Yes. That's a group of modern. What today the modern Indologists think is that the Bhagavatam is a medieval composition, maybe around the 9th century A.D. and so on. And they have their own idea about by their. All the Puranas are late, are all medieval. Products, although there may be oral traditions going back further. One way you can know is anything predicted in a Purana that came true, then you can know it was written after the prediction, right? Because obviously people can't see the future. Or at least we can't. So if we can't, nobody can. Right? Different methods like that, you know. So that's how they say. They, I mean, they don't think that Vyasadeva really existed, you know, and so on like that. It's all mythology. Yeah. You had your hand up next?
Yeah. So the Smriti have been existing since time immemorial, orally, and then written down 5,000 years ago. The Smriti, but in the Smriti, the Puranas, the Bhagavad Gita, they haven't existed before God.
Well, you can see the Mahabharata. The Mahabharata has stories of things that happened, you know, in the 28th millennium of this day of Brahma. Namely, Krishna's appearance, battle of Kurukshetra. Now, Krishna appears over and over again, so in a sense they're eternal. He appeared in different universes and enacted similar pastimes. So they're not temporary, but it actually occurred what happened while Vyasadeva was on the planet. It's like the newspapers, you know. So
the story in its whole compilation of it wasn't compiled before 5,000 years ago, right? Because
yeah, the way it was put together and assembled, it wasn't there. And it looks like the Puranas, as we'll see in the Bhagavatam, people are telling stories what happened when the four Kumaras visited Lord Garbhodakshayi Vishnu. You know, so these are very old incidents. Yeah, time to stop.